From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
All right, it is time for another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, we got to talk MVP Open this week. We got to talk about some semi-real-world stuff this week, and I don't mean like put seven people in a house and stop being polite and start getting real the real world.
Wow. That's a throwback.
I'm dating myself, aren't I? Anyway.
Oh, no, I used to love that show.
How are you? Which was your favorite? Let's talk real world. What was your favorite season?
Oh, I don't remember well enough. I mean, if you've listened to the show, you know that my memory is terrible.
That's true.
I can't remember movies or things. Or I get the one that I guess sticks out to me as being super dramatic was Seattle. Was that not the first season, though?
No, I think the first season was New York.
Oh, New York. Okay. I feel like Seattle
was like New York and San Francisco dramatic. Was up there pretty early, too. Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
This is I would watch a disc golf version of the real world.
Absolutely.
Like some of these pro disc golfers I was kind of hoping we would get a little more like fun stuff from the GMC bubble, but
I didn't really hear anything about everyone that was quarantining together up there.
That's okay. It's probably for the better. I know everyone. Yeah. No one wants all the drama.
We want all the drama.
Want it, but don't want it, right? Anyway, I'm glad we're back with another show. I hope everyone out there in disc golf land is doing well. Let's get right into it with the MVP Open, Sarah. We had the chalk picks, Paul McBeth, Paige Pierce winning again. Paul McBeth, the first time an MPO player has won back-to-back at Maple Hill, which is crazy. Oh, third time in his career.
Crazy.
And then Paige, I honestly don't know how many times she's won it there because I've lost count. Do you know?
I want to say, I just saw a graphic and I want to say six times.
That sounds about right.
I'm pretty sure it's six. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, let's start off over there. Let's start off on the FPO side. You know, what did you see out of Paige? Cause obviously like Hokum started out really hot.
Yeah.
And it ended up being close. It was only a one-shot win, which is nice. This wasn't one of those runaway wins for Paige. Yeah. It was a little bit of a battle. So what do you got?
Yeah. Well, so I guess I want to start at the top, and this isn't really about a particular player, but just watching. So I watched most of the live coverage and then watched some of the post-production. And I'm not sure if I talked about this last year or if I have even really noticed it before, but man, this course is fluky.
It definitely can be.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of little tunnel shots with tiny little trees where, you know, you could have like the perfect drive and hit like the tiniest little bit of a tree and knock you.
Well, I mean, that's woods golf.
I know. But there's a lot of holes that are just like tiny little trees everywhere. Plus, you've got a ton of water holes. There's lots of like interesting OB rules.
I think that's where maybe some of the trees. I think maybe that's where some of the flukiness comes in is some of the rules.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't.
And then you've got. I was gonna say you've got like hole four where people don't really know what to do. So you've got people like jump putting. Paul McBeth is throwing a thumber off the top.
Oh, I kind of love that though. I don't see that as fluky. I see that as like requiring just a different style of shot. Like maybe it's unconventional, but I think that's different than fluky. Like I think
of that as like putt-putt golf. Like it's not a real.
That's not putt-putt golf.
I don't know. I don't think of it as like a real hole.
Just because it's short?
No, just because it. I don't know. I guess that they blocked off the right side with a big banner so that you can throw the little hyzer down there. But that shot to me already seems really tricky because you've got the water in the back of the basket. You've got obviously the OB line back there and all those tiny little trees, and they block that off. So now people are jump. I think any shot that you're jump putting off of a tee is kind of like a throwaway hole.
I mean, I'll give you that jump putting is a little bit goofy off of a tee.
Yeah.
But you know, think about it. Vegas, you've got that triple island thing that people sometimes jump putt off of you know, like, so I mean, there's holes like that all over the place.
Yeah, I guess I'm just not a fan of that type of golf. So I obviously have never played there before, so I may have a totally unpopular.
It is like the rated as like the number two course in the world.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I don't know. So I guess that was my first thing is there's just like a lot of roots and rocks and water and OB rules and tiny trees. And
yeah, I think what we're seeing is, I think a lot of it comes from some of the weird tournament layout rules. I think one of the reasons Maple Hill is so beloved is because you can go there and, like, no matter what level of player you are, they have a layout for you. They've got,
true.
It's definitely a well-rounded experience for disc golfers as a whole. I think as a viewer,
it's frustrating.
There can be frustrations, but there's also, yeah. I mean, there's also some drama that comes with it. And like it or not, that's what Steve Dodge, the founder there and the tournament director, he knows drama, and he tries to dial that up, and it may not always come out the way we want it to. I think, you know, and we're kind of diverging here from the FPO conversation, but since we're on this track, you know, there was the situation on hole 8 in the MPO division where Paul McBeth threw, so it's one of several pond holes. This is the straight across the water one, often aced. Paul McBeth aces it first round, as does Steve Brinster. Round 2, Paul McBeth goes OB, but long right.
Yep.
And basically, he had to go to a drop zone and throw again because the rules were written in kind of an unclear fashion.
Right.
That said, hey, if you go OB, it said basically something along the lines of, like, OB in the water, go to the drop zone. OB beyond this wall, go to the last spot in bounds or whatever. But he was beyond the wall in the water. And
right.
So
yeah.
there needed to be some clarification. Now, when I looked at least like the map of it, the photo map, you know, the T sign, I thought it was pretty clear that, okay, Paul McBeth is long in this, you know, OB that's considered red. And so he's going to take it from the last spot in bounds. But on site, in the heat of the moment, they weren't looking at the tee. It looked like they were looking at the rules on the scorecard. And so he ended up playing from the drop zone, but then also took a provisional and played from the last spot in bounds. So he completed the hole twice, essentially, one time getting a 4, another time getting a 5 from the drop zone. And then, you know, appealed it with Steve Dodge and Jeff Spring, and overnight they changed it, so he actually gained a stroke back. So, yes,
yeah, that was a little
that's annoying, right? That's kind of annoying as a viewer, it's annoying as a player, it's probably annoying as a TD, too, right? It should be pretty cut and dry what's going to happen. And we kind of had something happen the week before that at GMC with Paige Pierce's Mando shot. There have been a couple funky rules things lately on the Pro Tour that I hope they can kind of button up. But I will say this. For all of the frustration that might bring from a lot of the competition purists, I know you live with one of them.
I do.
I think there is a positive spin we can put on it. And maybe this is just my glass half full type of sentiment on things. Number one, you know, it does get people talking about the tournament. It might not be the thing you want to talk about, but the way I look at it is look at the NFL. Stuff happens in the NFL all the time that's fluky. What's a catch? What's not a catch? Was this a fumble? Was this, you know, things like that. The NFL is still the most watched sport in the United States. Those kind of things, yes, they're frustrating, but they don't really diminish the viewership. And so I don't think people should be so worried about, oh, this thing happened, and it's going to make people not take disc golf seriously and not watch it. People are still watching disc golf. I don't think that's an issue. The other positive out of this is I think it's very educational. I think we saw a very smart player knowing the rules, knowing that he was able to take a provisional and having it work out in his favor. And so I think, you know, competitive disc golfers everywhere can take the positive spin out of that and see it as a good lesson that, hey, this doesn't feel right. This is weird. Like Big Dog, our tour manager, his what's he say at every player meeting at like every world, Sarah? You've heard it, I'm sure, a million times.
Provisional, provisional.
Exactly. When in doubt, take a provisional. And so I think this was a very...
Also, you want to be a grape, not a raisin. You need to hydrate.
I haven't heard that one, but I like that one. But I think this is a very high-profile example of that, of knowing that you can take a provisional. And, you know, Paige did it the week before as well. And so I think as much as it's frustrating that there has to be that provisional situation, it is educational to people who maybe aren't hardcore tournament players like Paul McBeth and Paige Pierce and still come across fluky rules things at their local B or C tier. So
yeah.
That's okay. Kind of how I choose to look at it. Sorry, we're getting down the road. No, it's okay.
I guess I have a different perspective on it too, because like you said, I do live with that person who is getting
I'm sure Sean was ranting and raving all weekend, right?
Well, he's not. It's people that are calling him
yeah.
when he's, you know, technically off hours, and now I've got to listen to the back and forth for 2 hours about like a disc going over a wall.
Yeah, I mean, look, a pro tournament should have it totally dialed in, yes.
For sure, yeah. Okay, anyway, so now that I got that out of the way, it's going to be an unpopular opinion from a lot of people, I'm sure. so yeah, the thing that I saw from Paige, I mean, she was her aggressive self where she needed to be. She had some putting issues, actually, I noticed during the first round. It seemed like the basket just did not want to catch some of her putts. She was 82%. Oh no, it was actually second round. In the second round, she was having some more putting woes. She was 56% from circle one putting, during the second round, and then brought it back up during round three. And what I really saw from her, I mean, she and Sarah Hokum went into hole 15 tied. And so that was really exciting for me as a viewer and part of the FPO field, seeing that, A, we knew that Sarah Hokum was going to already do really well in this course because she just has those extremely technical forehand lines in her bag.
Right.
And she's played here for 13 years in a row. I could not believe that. Which is super cool. So she's got tons of experience, even though they've adjusted the layout a little bit over time. And so, you know, I was rooting for her, quote unquote, as the underdog. And it just seemed like as Paige does, she gets, you know, she's very aggressive when she needs to be. And she just gets this like fierceness about her when it's time to turn it on. And so when they're still tied going into hole 15, Paige Pierce is like, oh no, like this is an uncomfortable spot. I don't want to be in. I need to give myself a cushion. And so she just does not let up. So hole 16, 17, actually, so 15, she parred, Hokum bogeyed, and then she went birdie, birdie, 16, 17, and Hokum went par, par. And so I believe Paige had three on her going into the last hole. And what was pretty surprising to me, and watching the post-production coverage, Sarah Hokum was actually commentating. She was like, yeah, I was super surprised because Paige actually laid up twice, I believe, on hole 18. She ended up taking a five, a bogey five, not because she went out of bounds for being too aggressive, which we've seen from her a lot, but from being like overly conservative.
Yeah.
And laying up twice so that she definitely didn't miss the island. And so that was pretty surprising for me to watch. And so she won by what, four? No, she won by one stroke, and that was pretty close, but she knew she had all of those shots to kind of play with and not put the OB into play. So that was pretty, I would say it was exciting for me, until Hokum kind of fell off pace a little bit on hole 15. And then you know that Paige is like going to take advantage of that.
Smells blood in the water.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I appreciate the close race. I believe Paige won by seven strokes or something like that last year. So it was nice to have a battle. And then Haley King was up in the mix for a little bit. She kind of fell off pace. And Lisa Fakus, unfortunately, didn't have a great last round, but we saw both of them on the lead card, which was cool. And Heather Young actually made a huge run for it. Third round, ended up shooting 1,002. Her third round to get up into third place, skipping Katrina Allen by two strokes. So nice. That was pretty cool too, even though we didn't get to see Heather on the footage. This is one of those courses I feel like is built perfectly for her game. So
Yeah.
I'm really happy that she was able to get up there in the podium spot as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. On the MPO side, you know, we could talk ad nauseum about Paul McBeth. It is cool because, you know, there had been a little bit of a spell of time where Paul didn't win, and that feels weird sometimes, right? So really the biggest thing I noticed is His putting game looked really back on point, really dialed. He hit 44% from circle two. And at this course, that's just deadly. Because, you know, there are going to be times where you're hitting a tree off the tee or on the approach and getting a kick and ending up outside the circle. And if you can still capitalize on those birdies when you're able to, you're gonna get an advantage. You know, the interesting part there, too, was he came into the final round down. And I was really impressed. The wind was up a little bit. It looked to me like he was managing the windy conditions better than Riki Waisaki. You know, hole 14, I take as an example. Macbeth, you know, it's another over-the-water shot. Macbeth throws something pretty overstable and kind of goes long and fades a little bit. And Riki, his shot just got smashed down into the water by the wind, you know. And so I thought that was pretty significant. Like you mentioned, the thumber. I love seeing Paul Macbeth throw a thumber. I don't think I've ever seen that dude throw a thumber before.
No, me neither. That's in my life. I wonder what he thinks about that hole.
Maybe he's just having fun throwing a thumber. I wonder. I would be curious to talk to him about what the evolution was on why he was throwing the thumber now. Maybe it was like you mentioned. Maybe he used to go that right side route, and I'd have to go back and look at the footage in the past. Yeah. I would imagine that's probably what it is. They took away that right side route, so he said thumber. And it worked. I also saw Andrew Fish throwing a thumber there too, which was cool. That makes a little more sense coming from his like frisbee background.
Definitely.
But Macbeth looked back to normal on the putting green, normal plus, I would say. And so if he can keep that going through the rest of the year, especially USDGC, I think he's especially going to be the favorite, just like he normally is. So good to see him back up on top and in the mix. Speaking of in the mix, I want to talk about Kyle Klein. This kid is something else. Like, I know...
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know, he's the U.S. amateur champion, I think, from last year. We've talked about him briefly on the show, but this was really a strong breakout weekend for him. You know, two rounds on the lead card at one of the biggest tournaments of the year, and he didn't even break a sweat. Like... He looked super calm and cool the whole time, and I was just really impressed with his poise and his maturity. And I think, you know, I want to say he's only 18 or 19.
He's pretty young. He might have just turned 18. Yep. I was impressed by his circle two putts, man. Like,
man, the final round on hole two, where he was, it was like 60 feet out, and he was down like. Kind of in that lower ditch, and then there was like a low hanging, it was like a low ceiling with this tree hanging down, and he just tossed this laser beam that was like riding this upward trajectory the whole time absolutely perfectly. And yeah, he hit some other really strong circle two putts. I was looking up his stats earlier because I felt like every time I was looking, he was making circle two putts. He only made 31% from circle two. He made four circle two putts. It felt to me like there was more than that. So I think there were quite a few from just circle's edge in general. Yeah, he's got a few on here that are at 27 feet on U-Disc. And so that's still very impressive. So, you know, between relative amount of power, maybe a little bit less than you know, the guys he was playing with final round, but still plenty of power, good control, and just seems to be really level-headed. I think he's going to be someone, if he continues touring, who we're going to hear from a lot more. And man, Discmania, always able to find these like young kids.
I know.
Like, I don't know, they're like scouting people out and everything. I love it. And then my, you know, there's a lot of takeaways from the MPO side. You know, another strong performance from Waisaki. We had another Calvin Heimberg on the final round lead card. Garrett Gerthy played really well. But I want to give a little love to Andrew Fish, the hero of disc golf Twitter. And
and his beard.
Oh, he didn't have Fish?
I thought he had a beard.
No, maybe he was just wearing a mask.
Oh, I swear he was. I swear before going to this event, I saw a picture of him with a beard.
Oh, maybe he did. I don't know. I haven't seen any photos of him with a beard.
His hair is definitely long.
I texted him, told him to get a haircut.
he was unrecognizable to me for a hot second. And then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Andrew Fish. you know, he goes hot round, round one, 900 par. And round two, on camera, comes out and goes one over. So complete opposite of the day before. But the thing that I was most impressed with was that even with all the difficulties, he was really strong in, at least it looked like he was really strong in his mental game. He was still sticking to his routine, which is very centered on breathing. And you can see, like, he's closing his eyes and breathing before all these shots. And, you know, I'm looking at his scorecard. He goes, bogey, birdie, bogey, birdie. Like, he was bouncing back from the rough shots. He didn't string them together. You know, he didn't string together the birdies, but he also didn't string together the bogeys. And so I just thought he was a really good case study for someone who maybe wants to learn how to deal with the ups and downs, and especially the downs of a high pressure round. I would highly suggest going to watch Andrew Fish play that second round at Maple Hill because, he was able to really hold it together. And I was really impressed, with his mental game there. And I thought he made all of our little community on Disc Golf Twitter very proud over the weekend. So
I'm sure,
wanted to give him a little love because he's good people and it was good to see him have a strong performance, in round one. Unfortunately, it didn't carry over. I mean, he finished tied for 12th, which is still great. That was his first time back at Maple Hill since like 2015 or something. So really solid performance. He's one of those guys who, I'm very confident that if he toured, he'd be consistently competing top 10, top five.
Definitely.
week in, week out. But he has a very successful career, so disc golf is more of his side gig, and he does it very well when he is side gigging. So those are kind of my takeaways on the MPO side. Sarah, anything else that we need to wrap up on the MVP Open front?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I was pretty excited to see the battle in FPO and hope to see more of that the rest of this year.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of put a bow on some of our earlier talk on the course and the flukiness. I don't want anyone to take it as us like ragging on the event or anything. Like, it's just something where if you're a high profile tournament, for better or for worse, you come under a spotlight, you come under some scrutiny. You know, look at Ledgestone a couple weeks back, people were talking about all the backups. With this tournament, it's some of the OB rules. And I think that having the spotlight, you've earned it, you've gotten to that point. You're running a good tournament, but that doesn't exempt you from, still looking for ways to improve. So I think that's kind of the bow I'd like to put on that package. So, Sarah, let's take a break, and when we come back, we will do a little more chatter. We'll do some run or lay up, and some hot rounds. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. This episode of PDGA Radio is presented by Marion County, West Virginia. Experience some of West Virginia's best disc golf. With two courses of their own and more than 25 others within a two-hour drive, you can always be ready for a round. Top the day off with a renowned pepperoni roll, local craft brew, or a one-of-a-kind dessert, and you've got an ace. Come discover the middle of everywhere in Marion County, West Virginia. Visit marioncvb.com for more information. All right, it is time for the Birdie Fuel Coffee Hot Rounds. Sarah, the rounds pretty delicious over on the FPO side.
Nice. And I did enjoy some Birdie Fuel coffee this morning. I had the Missy Gannon mixed bag.
Oh,
I made it extra
nice.
Strong. It was glorious.
Unfortunately, Missy is not on our hot rounds list, but that's
no,
okay.
No, she's not. But her coffee is dang good. So thank you for that, Missy. All of my hot rounds actually came from the MVP Open, so it makes it pretty easy for me this weekend. The fifth hottest rated round was a 986 from Haley King. She shot that her second round to tie for fourth. The 996 from Katrina Allen made it to our fourth spot. She shot that her first round and ended up tied for fourth with Haley King. Like I mentioned, Heather Young shot that 1,002 her third round to jump up into a solo third place, and she That was her third round. And then Paige Pierce shooting the 1,003, her second round to take first place. And Sarah Hokum with the hottest rated round of the weekend with 1,005, her first round to take second place.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I wonder, was the 10.02, did we determine if that was Heather's career high? That has to be her career high.
I'm not sure. I can look that up while you're doing doing yours.
Yeah, I bet it probably is, but maybe not. I'd be stoked if it wasn't. That'd be awesome. All right. It is time for the Chris Dickerson segment of the show, because Chris Dickerson shot a 1074 rated second round at the MVP Open. He ended up tying for fifth place. I thought it was nice to see him doing the hot performance earlier in the tournament. You know, we've seen so many times this flurry comes in the final round. So now let's do it in round one, Chris Dickerson, and then in round two, and then in round three. Andrew Fish, we mentioned him earlier. His 1079 rated opener came in as our fourth hottest round of the weekend. Very nice. We have two 1081s, one from Ricky Wysocki during the second round of the MVP Open, and another from Timo Hartmann. This was over, I believe, in Germany, the 35 Deutsche Disc Golf Meisterschaft. And Timo shot that 1081 in the first round to win that tournament, so congratulations. We have another European tournament. This is the Sørlandet Open, I will say. And this was in Tivjet, Norway. And
this week.
Yeah, that's okay. This was from Knut Holland, and he shot this 10. I'm sorry, I went away from the screen so I could try and pronounce names. He shot a 1082 in the first round to win that tournament. And our hottest rated round of the weekend was Paul McBeth's 1084 in the final round. That was a 10 under par finish to win the MVP Open. All of our hot rounds, as usual, are brought to you by Birdie Field Coffee. Head over to birdiefieldcoffee.com and use the code PDJRadio and get 10% off your order. Again, that is birdiefieldcoffee.com.
And I did confirm that was Heather Young's hottest rated round to date.
Nice.
Yeah, by quite a bit. Heather. The next hottest that I'm seeing, the next hottest that I'm seeing is a 996 at Tennessee States in June.
Yeah, very cool. Good for her. She is ascending right now.
Oh, so yeah. It's brink of the iceberg. Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, like, the jump between this season and next season, too. So definitely. That'll be something to watch.
Oh, one other thing before we switch gears a little bit. GK Pro put out kind of a fun two-part skins round.
We didn't even talk about the Kevin Jones ace.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Okay, so speaking of that, it was Kevin Jones, Jeremy Colling, Ricky Wysocki, and... Oh, it was the fourth person. I'm totally blanking now.
I don't know. Was it Luke Humphreys?
No. So Luke Humphreys was doing the commentating. But while I remember who the fourth person is, because my brain is not working.
Yeah, I apologize.
Duh. Oh my gosh. It's Chris Dickerson. Of course. They talked about what he had for breakfast that morning, because he loves his chicken sandwiches, his Chick-fil-A. Oh, yeah. So that was pretty fun. If you want to catch that, it's over on, it's actually sponsored by OTB, but it's on GK Pro's YouTube channel.
OTB, been sponsoring a lot of stuff. I saw they sponsored the Jomez footage this weekend.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. They're branching out.
Cash.
So that ace looked extremely painful.
Yes.
It's like, I'm glad he wasn't hurt. If you didn't catch it, he basically, it looks like... It's one of those tees that's...
It's like paver.
It's like pavers, but then it looked like it was surrounded by wood, and sometimes when it's been raining, it can get kind of slick.
Yep.
And it looks like he might have stepped on that, and then he just did, like, a breakdancer's move at the bottom.
He fell and, like, bashed his knee, man. Oh, my God, yeah. I'm surprised it didn't hurt more.
Yeah, if I had fallen like that, I would have been down for the count, probably, but...
Yes.
Yeah, he aced, so it's okay. No pain.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, that one went super viral. Like, it was getting millions of views on Facebook and, GK Pro's YouTube page has currently 315,000 views on that one, which is a lot, obviously. And they've gone up to 37,500 subscribers. I think I just looked 2 days ago, and that was in the 36s. So,
awesome.
Yeah, great for them, great for disc golf to have another viral moment like that. I think it was gained on SportsCenter and stuff like that too. So pretty cool stuff. So Sarah, yeah, we'll change gears a little bit here, and you know, there's been some discussion going on in some internet forums, or, you know, Facebook groups and other podcasts and everything, about sexism in disc golf. And I've always taken a lot of pride in the fact that, you know, we were one of the first, if not the first, shows to have a female disc golfer co-hosting on a podcast.
That's right.
And so, you know, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't really talk about this as kind of a current thing going on. So, Sarah, do you want to kind of catch us up to speed and just kind of give us some of your thoughts on where what kind of has brought the conversation to the surface a little bit? I mean, not to the surface, to the surface, I guess. It's always kind of bubbling under, right? If we're being honest.
Definitely, yeah. So we talked about this
in
like a recent conversation and maybe several episodes ago about, you know, one of the biggest things in women's disc golf is how to grow the sport, how to make this sport more attractive for women, a safer place for women to feel like they can step onto a disc golf course and feel supported and, you know, be able to take their game to their next level in a comforting, supporting kind of environment. And we know that, especially during this time of quarantine where people are stuck inside and are maybe on their computers or phones a little bit more frequently throughout the day and night, there are a lot of, you know, disc golf kind of seeps into the social media realm as well. And this is not just specific to disc golf. This is how our society is at this point, unfortunately, with just some kind of, I'll name it, creepy trolls that are sitting behind their screens and making lewd or inappropriate or objectifying type comments for, you know, on videos of women or pictures of women that are anywhere in the world, but specifically to this conversation, throwing discs.
Yep.
And honestly, there, it kind of goes back to the blame the victim type conversation. It's like, oh, well, she was wearing short shorts and a low cut tank top and whatever. And it's like, I wear those types of things when I play, and I'm a professional, you know, disc golfer and otherwise. And just because I wear something like that doesn't mean that I'm looking to be objectified or sexualized or have comments, about anything else but the disc coming out of my hand and going near the basket or my skill or my form or things like that. So I think it kind of just boiled up this past week because of a video that was posted on Instagram and Facebook, I believe, and some of these creepy internet trolls did what they do, and instead of supporting this woman and, you know, making her feel like a part of the disc golf community and congratulating her on her shot or commenting positively on her form, they, you know, all of the creepy comments about her body or what she was wearing or other videos or pictures that were in her personal profile. And it all comes back to moderation. There have been some opportunities for companies in the disc golf sphere to moderate and
remove comments like that.
Yeah,
right?
remove comments like that are hurtful to the tiny subsection of women that we have in this sport. And so as a female disc golfer, I perfectly support this woman that was in this video. She's throwing discs. She's one of us. But I do not support the men that are objectifying her and making these lewd comments because it hurts the sport. If I'm just thinking about 10 years ago when I first picked up a disc, and if social media, I don't think Instagram was around quite 10 years ago, but if I'm just picking up a disc and I'm like, oh man, I want to check out all these disc golf production companies and like see what they're putting on their social media, and I'm looking at it and female disc golfers are getting promoted or highlighted and all the comments I see are about her body or what she's wearing or how
sexy she is. Yeah, it just turns into a giant thirst trap. It's gross.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, I don't want to be around something like that. I want to play the sport because it's something I enjoy doing. It's an activity that I enjoy doing, and I don't want to feel uncomfortable on social media or on a disc, physically on a disc golf course. If this, like, that's the kind of vibe that I would get as a newcomer to the sport. Like, oh, okay, women are not a big part of this, and when they do,
when they are part of it, it's not for their skill.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well,
so the other part of it too is some thought from, and this comes from conversations all over the interwebs, from groups of disc golf women, all the way from recreational women, all the way up to the best top pros in the world are included in this current conversation. And it's about these companies also possibly highlighting women that they feel like are going to get them more engagement on their page. So possibly choosing a woman who is a little bit more scantily clad over someone who is not. So that's another piece of the conversation. And I obviously don't have proof that they are doing that intentionally. I feel like they should be highlighting all and every type of woman, you know, recreational pro, teenagers, 60-year-olds, like every type and shape and size of woman should be highlighted as a female disc golfer. It shouldn't matter what she looks like. And I feel like there's some thought from the fellow women in the sport that more of the traditionally attractive women, I'll say, are being highlighted over others.
I mean, it's hard. This has been a problem as long as I've been in disc golf, and I'm sure from before I've been in disc golf, as long as disc golf has been around, probably. But, like, you know, there are always comments on social media or on YouTube or things like that about, you know, women who are playing disc golf and basically just objectifying them. And so I think there are two components of this. Number one, look, dudes, stop being gross. Stop doing it. Like, this isn't your, it's not your body. It's not your, you don't need to do that, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, for all this talk all the time about how welcoming the disc golf community is and how great this community is, there are some real turds out there, man. And so, like,
you're being way more, I'm trying to be, like, way more politically correct, and I'm so happy that you're using the words turds and thirst trap. I appreciate that.
Well, that was the politically correct version of what I wanted to say. But look, you don't have to do this. Like, it's just it's a general toxicity in our culture, and it sucks that it permeates into disc golf. So I think there are two things there. I think number one is, dudes, stop. Like, check yourself and understand that, hey, you know, the disc golf course doesn't need to be your pickup spot. Yes. You can go out and play disc golf and just play disc golf. And if there are women out there, welcome them into the sport, show them what to do. But, you know, let them do their thing. Don't gawk at them. Don't leer at them. Don't try and pick up on them. Just let them play and be part of the community and, you know, help it grow. Everyone's always talking about how great the community is and grow the sport and blah, blah, blah. Put your money where your mouth is and do it. The second component of this is, yeah, on social media, we probably, there does need to be, from various stakeholders, you know, and PDGA has had things like this before where we've had to moderate comments and stuff. And, like, nobody wants to moderate comments on social media because, A, it's, you know, there's the whole free speech aspect, right? And you don't want people to be thinking that you're trying to censor them and blah, 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 because then they get all bent out of shape about that. But B, there is the other part of this, which is engagement. And like it or not, social media, a lot of it runs off of negative engagement, and I hate it. And so really, we need to start having a greater think about, you know, what's more important, the engagement so that disc golf gets in front of people, or the disc golf that is actually gained in front of people. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We can balance this. we can moderate, we can take out some of the comments, and make this so that we are being a friendlier place for women.
Yes.
And so I think that's the biggest thing is, think before you type. And if you do run a social media channel, don't be afraid to take some people out of the comments. Like, it's like, at the end of the day, we're still building this thing, and we want to build it, and we have an opportunity to build it into something better. And this is just society in general, like, and social media is a hellhole half the time. And so I understand it's not an easy job. It's not easy for anyone who's running a social media account, especially now. But I think it's something that, for the greater good of the sport, that we can try and effort a little bit more. And so I think it's a good conversation for us to have. I think it's a reality of the sport, and I'm glad that we're talking about it. Sarah, do you have any more closing thoughts?
I don't think so. Just be a good person. If you wouldn't say it to your sister, then don't say it.
Or your mom.
How about you pass it through? Or your mom. Yeah, pass it through that filter. Or your daughter. Exactly.
But at the same time, like, that shouldn't, I love that line of thinking, Sarah, so I'm not trying to be rude, but, like, you shouldn't have to even contextualize it like that. I'm sorry. Like,
but you're I not, shouldn't, I shouldn't have to like think. We're, like, good people, though, so for us, like, we would never dream of commenting on some of these pictures with, like, a gif of a dripping donut.
Yeah, that was one of the comments. That meant. Yeah.
I don't really get it either.
I can draw the line. It's
yeah,
gross.
But but these aren't people that have that filter naturally like you and I do.
I know.
So I think there is something that they need to, there is some sort of new thought process that needs to be done.
No, you're right. Yeah,
before right. They type.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, if you have feedback on this, let us hear it. radio@pdga.com. Like, I know it's not comfortable, but if 2020 has taught me anything, it's that, you know what, sometimes you got to be uncomfortable to fix things. And we don't always get the luxury of being comfortable, even in disc golf. And this goes to other conversations we're not going to get into right now. There was another discussion I was following on social media about what Jeremy Colling wore on the Jomez footage for, like, that you could see on camera for literally 3 seconds. And it's like, you know what, like, we don't always get the luxury of being comfortable, because change doesn't come through comfort. So,
love it.
Anyway, Sarah, let's go from that relatively heavy topic to run it or lay up before we close out the show. We've got this one, and I will say we're actually going into a semi-heavy topic for disc golf. This is one that kind of this one might get some people up in arms, Sarah.
Yeah, that's true. It's nothing we've never talked about before, though.
No, I know.
Okay,
but it was brought up by the top player in disc golf recently on Twitter as well, so let's hear it.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so this one comes from my good friend Katrina Allen. It is, ratings need to go for pros.
Now, Paul McBeth also brought this up in the context of the Dynamic Disc Open footage on CBS, in that ratings were never mentioned, and he said something along the lines of, oh, because they don't matter for pros.
Yeah, that's true.
I am going to lay this one up because, ratings might not matter if you're Paul McBeth because you're the best. But, man, some people need something to aim for more than just scores, and I think having that rating, that number, that way to track your progress is important, regardless of if you're an am or a pro. So, personally, I lay this one up. But, Sarah, I think you have some additional thoughts, yeah?
Yeah, I would say, so this is a good point that Robert Leonard, who is
PDGA,
on the rules
PDGA
committee?
Marshall, PDGA Marshall, yep. Volunteer.
He's worn a lot of hats in the PDGA. Yeah. But he kind of contextualized this a little bit and said, ratings also determine what pros can play amateurs in lower events. The issue is the definition of pros. Top pros and touring pros agree don't need ratings, but all pros would not be possible. So yes, that makes sense if you're kind of flip-flopping between amateur and pro. Like if you haven't taken cash yet and you're trying to qualify for Am Worlds, that type of thing. But I don't know, just from a personal perspective, ratings can really get into your head. And
it's a mental game, Sarah.
Like, I was just going to say, maybe this is just like a sign of my mental weakness or something. But I know for years, you know, I started playing pro in 2014. And I think I talked about this maybe last year, but just shooting myself in the foot before I even get to the tournament by going on to the tournament webpage and sorting by rating.
By rating, yeah.
And being like, okay, well, I'm probably going to take second to last because that's where I'm rated. And so for me, it's just kind of like, it's stupid. And I stopped doing that when I realized that it was not productive and it was a very negative mindset for me to go into a tournament with. But yeah, I think if you are, if you've reached whatever, maybe like a certain rating, then at that point it can just be null and void.
Maybe they're just, maybe this is where that like touring pros card kind of thing comes into place a little bit more.
Yeah,
like maybe if you're, if you're qualified as a touring pro, maybe you play a certain amount of tournaments on the Elite Series, then you don't have a rating. But at the same time, like, you know, like, then what, is the PGA just not going to, like, hype up Paul McBeth's rating?
No,
or
I was
your
just
round
say,
rating?
It is,
or
yeah, it is good.
There go the hot rounds. Come on, guys.
I know, you're right. I do understand that point about it. But I think if I weren't a pro and this didn't personally affect me, then I would lay it up. But I'm going to run it.
Interesting. So you're saying you'd be fine without having a rating?
Yes.
You think it would help you?
Yes.
Okay. Just to go in and just play.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
just have
your
expectation.
You're like play. Like, your finish in the tournament determines your skill, essentially.
My rank. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Like there would be no difference then between me and Katrina Allen.
Except for the number. Except for that career wins column on the PGA.
Oh, yes, yeah, okay. Slight detail, minor details.
Majors.
I'm totally joking
about
that part, obviously.
I know that. I'm just giving you a hard time. All right, next one is our lighter one of the segment. It's September 16th as we record this, Sarah. So here's the statement. It's too early for Halloween decorations.
I'm definitely running that.
Yeah, you think it's too early?
And this, yes. And it's very funny because I'm obsessed with Halloween and dark things. And my birth is the day after Halloween. So every birthday party I ever have was always Halloween themed.
Oh, we were having this discussion. We have some friends who are due on October 30th and they don't want the baby to be born on Halloween. And we're like, oh, it'd be cool. And then other people are like, no, it definitely would not be cool.
Oh, because I think it's like a bad omen or something?
No, just because they're like, yeah, every birthday is going to have to be Halloween themed. And they don't maybe
But that's
want
fun because then you don't have to come up with, like, it's already a built-in theme. You don't have to get creative every
Gosh,
year.
Gosh, what if you're born on Halloween but then end up like hating Halloween though? Or like,
like people that are born on Christmas? Hate Christmas.
Yeah, my nephew is a Christmas Eve kid, and like, no joke, I don't think he had a legit birthday party until he was like 11.
Oh.
Granted, that's kind of on my sister, but
yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Back to your comments on.
Yes, I
on
think
why
it is
too early.
It's freaking 90 degrees in Nashville still. Like, I don't want to. Yes, I am drinking pumpkin things and eating pumpkin things, but I do not want to see a single Halloween decoration until it is at least in the 60s consistently, because that is fall to me. This is not fall.
I'm laying this one up because you know what? Like, this year's just basically been one big haunted mess anyway. So let's just fully lean into it.
That's true.
No, I like, we really like Halloween in our house. And so, like, is it too early for me to physically want to go outside and put up the decorations? Yeah. But will I if my kid wants to? Yeah. So I look at it as I don't think it's too early. I think it's fun. And I think we all kind of need it right now. Like, I know there's some people who are like putting up Christmas lights already just to like brighten. Well, just to like brighten things up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw a guy like 2 weeks ago who already had all the Halloween stuff out.
Dang.
He's got a big head start on everything. Are you gonna, do you have a Halloween costume yet for this year?
Oh, I have not thought that far in advance.
No.
But every year, so Sean isn't huge on holidays or celebrating anything really in general. And I've kind of gotten him I don't know if he's like excited about Halloween decorations, but every year I've bought something new to kind of add to the decor outside. Yeah. So he gets involved when I force him to get up on the ladder and hang things from the roof and all that kind of stuff. But we don't live on a street anymore where there's going to be any trick or treating. It's like a long winding country road. So that kind of stinks because we won't have any trick or treaters, but I'll still go all out.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah, I don't know what Halloween's going to look like yet.
Oh, yeah.
With all the COVID and stuff. Things. We'll see. We'll see. All right. Well, that was a fun one. We'll talk more Halloween stuff as it gets closer. And if you got any run-under layup things that you want us to get at, send us a message, radio@pdga.com. I'm going to also send an apology to our top listener friend, Andrew Lockridge. We didn't do any picks this week. I know you sent them
in. Oh, we do need to go over our picks, though. Quickly.
We'll just do it next week with Pro Tour. No. Is there a Pro Tour next week? No, is it the week after? I don't know. But I wasn't gonna do picks for the main state championship.
Okay.
It is on UDisc if you want to do the UDisc like pick six.
Spoiler alert. Neither one of us are winning now. So.
Oh, are the listeners winning?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we do got to talk about it.
Okay.
Let's give Andrew some love for the listeners.
All right. So Andrew picked Paige Pierce and Macbeth to win, so he got 4 points for both of those. Katrina and Wysocki for top five. So he racked it up with 6 points. So perfect score.
So that's the first time that's happened, I think.
Yeah. I got 2 for Paige, 0 for the rest of my picks. You got 1 for Kat, 1 for Macbeth for top five, and 0 for Hokum and Heimberg. So that puts you at 28, me at 25, and listeners/Andrew Lockridge at 29.
Dang, Andrew. Nice job, buddy. Nice job. Well, I don't think we're going to do proper picks because we didn't plan it out, but I will read Andrew's picks for the main state championship. He's going chalk again. He's got Eagle, McMahon, and Chris Clemens, winner and top five on MPO. And an FPO, Sarah Hokum, and Courtney Cannon for winner and top five.
Oh, nice.
Main state championships are this weekend. It's a DGPT Silver Series. I do believe GK Pro is going to be filming, and there will be UDisc live scoring. I'm not aware of any live coverage but other than scoring. But either way, nice to have another tournament. And then the week after, we've got the Music City, right? Even though it's
that's right.
It's an A tier. It's not
and
that.
Then Jonesboro, yeah.
Yeah, Music City, Jonesboro, and then the majors, the women's national championship and the USDGC. So the short season's coming to a close soon.
I know. I'm about to hit my mini tour right as I'm.
I know it's gonna be fun
battling all the steroid.
It's okay. You're just gonna be juiced. You're gonna throw as far as you've ever thrown.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's not the performance enhancing kind, unfortunately.
No, it's not. It's like the sucky kind that makes me feel like I have a fever constantly and can't go to sleep. But anyway, hey, I have some shout outs.
Oh, yeah, let's hear them.
I should have shouted this out while we were talking about the subject, but I wanted to just share, if you have not listened to Ladies of the Chains podcast, they did an entire episode on sexism and disc golf. They published it on September 14th. So head over there. They may get a little more, I haven't listened to it yet, unfortunately, but they may get a little more controversial than we did on this show. So I would check that out. And then I'm shouting out myself again. Sean and I put out our second video on our new YouTube channel.
Oh yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah. It's been fun. I just looked at our views.
Is this a laser going toward your head on this thumbnail?
It's going from my head to the disc. This is all this is like Sean's passion project. I was like, yes, I will do this with you, but I have so many little side projects going on right now. That was like, you're in charge of everything. So I'm very impressed, like how quickly he's learned all the video editing. I'm doing kind of the marketing stuff, like on YouTube and on Instagram and Facebook and that kind of thing. But I'm actually pretty astonished. I'm looking at our views.
When are your dogs going to be in the video? Like, they're in the logo. You can't even get them in the video yet, can you?
Oh, hold on now. I'm still talking about the views I'm excited about. We have 855 views on the first video, which I'm pretty psyched about. And our second video is much lower than that. So
132
video number two,
on my end.
Yeah. Video number two is fun, though. It's a course called Two Rivers Park in outside of Nashville. And it's way longer, super hilly. It was windy. It was really hot. And if you don't know, and I'm trying to like point this out whenever I promote these, My husband used to be one of the best disc golfers in the entire world, and he has like the smoothest form you've ever seen. He just has like, he just racks up birdies in the most lazy, casual way you've ever, like, frustrating way that you've ever seen.
Should be called lazy disc golf.
Lazy disc golf. Yeah. And I'm like struggling to get my pars, and he's like just racking them up. So you should definitely check it out. But no, we are going to have one of the dogs in our little intro on one of them, but I think there was some hunting going on somewhere around our property, and one of our dogs gets really scared, and he was very distracted. So once it gets a little cooler and we can bring them out for an entire round, we'll do that. But
gotcha.
Yeah, it's been super fun.
Yeah, what did we say? Giveaway at what? 1,000? 1,000
subscribers? At 1,000 followers? Yeah.
All right, we got some work to do, people.
We have a lot of work to do. Sinclair Disc Golf, people. Sinclair Disc Golf. Hit it up.
All right, cool. Well, hey, I think that's going to do it for our show this week. Sarah, I hope you feel better and get off the roids. And are you at least less itchy?
It's funny. I'm not itching at all during the day, and then it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I've been getting...
brutal.
So 2 nights ago, I got 2 hours of sleep. So I got 2 hours of sleep, 2 hours of sleep, and then last night I got 4 hours of sleep, and I'm just, like, my face is super flush right now, and I feel like I have a fever, so it's really fun.
I hope you feel better. Go take a nap, and hopefully you'll be doing better soon. Thanks. So, yeah, hang in there. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Leave us a review. Share the show with a friend, and we will be very grateful. And send us some feedback. We had some good topics this week to chat about, I think. radio@pdga.com. So, Sarah, we will chat next week. Feel better, get some rest. You got Music City, so you gotta gear up, right?
Yep. We are going to play Cedar Hill this weekend and film that round for the YouTube channel and get some practice in. Hopefully it's a little bit cooler.
Nice. All right. Well, hey, good luck and feel better. And we'll catch up with you soon. So, for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDJ Radio. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you next week.